Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, Expanse fans, and welcome to episode 5 of The Churn and episode 6 of The Expanse, where we break down Paradigm Shift. I'm Cher Martinetti, and of course with me,
Adam Swiderski, inventor of the Swiderski Drive. It's coming soon. You'll see. It's going to be amazing.
I can hardly contain myself with the excitement.
I know.
So on this week's episode of The Expanse, it was, you know, we're still feeling a little bit of a hangover from the very, very emotional episode last week. And clearly the crew of the Rossi are also kind of starting to work through what Miller's sacrifice ultimately. Holden and Naomi kind of make it the space future version of Facebook official, I guess. That works. Fred Johnson gets himself a little bit of insurance, but we start to see that there's a couple of problems brewing in the OPA. So what's my should I tell everybody that, like, who's gonna be here later, you think?
Sure, I think you should do that.
Okay, I actually am gonna say his last name wrong, but fan favorite Diogo is going to be joining us later this afternoon on the pod. How do you say Andrew's last name, guys? Because Ty and Daniel.
Rutilio.
Okay.
Yes.
I should know how to say that.
I'm hoping he speaks entirely in Belter Patois when we have him on the phone.
That'd be amazing.
I'll just sit here dumbstruck, not knowing exactly what's happening.
But I should have requested that.
It'll be wonderful.
I should have requested that. As always, if you are listening out there, make sure you go to iTunes and rate us. Give us 5 stars and lots of love, because we do this with all the love in the world.
Indeed.
And yeah.
So yeah, this episode, did you mention the side story, the framing story that we got in this episode either?
With Christian?
No. The Solomon Epstein.
No, I haven't
mentioned
that yet.
Yeah, so that was the big thing for me that was very cool, because that is taken from Drive, which is a short story / novella published alongside the main books that tells the story of the origins of the Epstein Drive, which is the drive that allows basically for the colonization of the solar system and the belt. Sam Huntington.
There goes that question that I was going to ask Daniel and Ty.
There you go. Well, they can talk about it.
No,
it's great. But, you know, Sam Huntington from Being Human and Superman Returns.
A.K.A. Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah, exactly. Played Solomon Epstein. That was really... I just thought that was neat.
He did a really good job.
And it went in a way that I did not expect, which I thought was very cool. I mean, I expected it because I read the book, or the short story, I should say. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you get Star Trek... when they first warp drive, and it's this big triumphant moment, and in this one, it was a triumphant moment that ended in tragedy, you know? So that was, I thought, a very interesting way to handle a story like this. But so that was really cool. I thought this was a breakout episode for Ava Sarala.
Definitely. And I was actually going to bring this up with you because, you know, not to, like, throw you under the bus, but you have not always been team Christian or I'm going to say her name wrong too.
Shreya Ghoshal.
Shreya. But, like, you've always kind of been, that's not been your most favorite part of the show.
That is true. And I will say that part
and
of that.
And I think that she, I got to be honest, I think that season 2, she's really way more comfortable with that character.
Yeah.
And now she's starting to act like, you know, and Queen Bee.
And let me tell you
I'm
why.
I'm here for it.
Let me tell you why. I think that at the beginning, and this was, you know, by nature of the way you have to tell the story, that she was a little behind the curve. She didn't know what was going on. She was catching up to things that we already kind of knew were going on,
okay.
Who's Holden, etc. And now I feel like she has hit her stride politically, the character, I mean,
mm-hmm.
And it's allowing for some really great moments. I mean, her moment with Aaron Wright, her scene with Aaron Wright in this episode was fantastic. I took in my notes. I was like, wow, what a great speech. And she perfects the smiling, silent mic drop moment, which I thought was just like, I almost like cheered at my desk when I was watching that episode, when that scene. So, yeah, no, I thought this was a great episode for her. I thought the way that Holden and Naomi's relationship developed was interesting. You see the intimacy they have in their scene in the bunks, mm-hmm. but then also some hidden fissures there going on.
I was also
going
to say that if there is a theme to this episode, I feel like the theme is secrets. Because everyone seems to have their own little secrets. And it's like Holden is now suddenly like putting it all out on the table. And he's kind of the only one putting it out on the table.
Right.
And showing his hand. So.
And Amos.
Yeah. But Amos is always like.
Yeah. He just plays with his hand forward at all times. Like his cards are always facing you and he still beats you.
Right. I feel like Amos just has no filter. Like he literally, whatever it is he's thinking, he's saying. So
I continue to love Wes Chatham's performance in that role.
He's just my favorite character.
Just
now.
The blankness of, you know, oh yeah, I just almost beat that guy to death. I'm going to go have a drink. Bye.
Yeah.
You know, I it's just so, I mean, it's scary in a sense because of what that means about the type of person he is, but, and what he's capable of. But as a viewer, it's so entertaining. And the dynamic between him and Alex was fun. We get to see more of the Rossi crew being familial and with their little bed about Holden and Naomi's tryst. So, no, I thought it was a really strong episode. And I thought it was interesting because I expected more of a reset episode. In other shows, and the one I always compare it to is Game of Thrones, you know, after the big, there's always the episode 9 of the season where something huge happens, like the Red Wedding or Ned Stark gets beheaded. Spoilers.
I mean, if you have to say spoilers this many years later.
So you have that big episode 9, and episode 10 is kind of like, okay, we're all going to catch our breath and reset the pieces on the board so that next season we can get going. And I felt like this episode, you know, we had the big almost season finale scope thing happen last week, but this episode just moved. It moved forward, and instantly we know what our new, you know, what the new conflicts are, mm-hmm. what everybody's goals are post Eros crashing into Venus, and... it's exciting. It was definitely more propulsive than I expected. I don't mind a table setting episode, you know, but I was very happy to see this just move forward like this.
So I'm a couple episodes ahead, even though I know you've read the books and
I've
not read, just in case anyone out there listening has not heard, Adam's read all the books. But I'm not on this book yet. But I am a few episodes ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say that everything that you just said about what this episode is, that's, you can say the same exact, like, that level of intensity for the next few episodes. Like, this show is not really fucking around right now. So, and I love it. I definitely loved the whole part with the Epstein drive. I think Kris Jenn has definitely, she's Queen Bee, and I love that. And you know what, too? Like, we're going to start noticing, like, you're going to start seeing cracks in the facade on all the characters. And I think this episode, we're seeing cracks in Alex's facade. Because something's not, you know, he keeps everything super tucked in. And he's very hospital corners, it seems. Like, everything's good and fine. But let's say hi to Ty and Daniel while I figure this out with Andrew. So, hi, guys.
Hey.
How you doing?
Things are fine. How about you?
I'm swell. Can I just first say that, again, I thought last night's episode, because we're the day after, was absolutely beautiful and amazing. Even after seeing it twice and then watching it again and live tweeting it last night. So I just want to shout that out. And also Bob Monroe, your special effects guy, is just bringing it.
Yeah, I was reading some of his posts on Reddit about the one thing I think we didn't discuss last week was the fact that scene with Miller and Julie was basically done on a mattress in a blue room, and that's it.
Yeah, and no, it was that was a hell of a day.
Yeah, I mean,
there was a lot of work done that one.
Yeah, and the response generally has been pretty great. So, but this episode, I wanted before we bring Andrew and I just wanted to talk really briefly about the drive section and what the impetus was behind bringing that into the show. Now, framing this particular episode, how Sam Huntington came to be playing Solomon Epstein, et cetera.
And Sam did also, I just want to interject, he did a great job because I'm watching him And all I'm thinking is, you know, obviously we know that he's not really in a high G anything. And watching him move, even trying to like lift his hand and all the facial expressions was, I really thought he was in a spaceship. I was buying it.
Yeah. That was a great bit.
Yeah. I think that was my favorite part of the episode, his whole part. So talk about that a little bit.
So Naren Shankar, who wrote episode 6, had talked about putting the Solomon Epstein story in this season somewhere right from the beginning when we very first started breaking the season in the writer's room. And because he was writing 6 and he felt like it was a nice transition point to talk about how technology changes society after all the events of episode 5, he decided he was going to write the Solomon Epstein story in his episode. And, you know, he's the showrunner, so nobody could argue. So he put it in his episode, and it had been in there right from the very first draft. It's gone through some changes, but that basic story has been in there right from the beginning. And then dovetailing Solomon's story of technology and sacrifice and not getting to see the future immediately leading into the events at the end of episode 6 with Bobby and her team and this new groundbreaking technology that is now once again going to alter human society. It just felt like too good of a moment to pass up.
So I guess, can you talk a little bit about the Epstein drive as an invention on your guys' part and where that came from, where the science behind it is? I mean, obviously it's something that we don't currently, you know,
obviously have
or have a line towards. So where, what the origin of that was and where it came from, I guess.
Yeah. So the science of it is that it's very efficient and it works really well and it lets spaceships fly around in the solar system.
Okay. Cool story.
Great. All right.
there is a design. Ty years ago was saying that he'd seen an article that is the basis of our Epstein drive, which we will never actually talk about, so that when that theory gets disproved, we aren't immediately dated.
So you did,
but
actually,
it's out there somewhere.
Yeah, so you actually did base that on something.
Yeah, I mean, I know what the Epstein drive is doing to achieve the levels of thrust that it can achieve and the fuel efficiency that it has. But I'm never, ever going to talk about it because, as Daniel said, the minute you talk about it, somebody will go, hey, but this follow-up article showed that that wouldn't actually work. And then now, you know, like as he said, you're dated.
So I want to ask you a question, speaking since we're talking about spaceships and Epstein Drive and all that. What do you think is faster, the Rossi or the Millennium Falcon?
Oh, my God.
The Millennium Falcon can go to hyperspace.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the Millennium Falcon plans. You can go between stars in this course of...
Who do you think's a better pilot? Alex or Han?
Yeah, we've written both of these characters.
I know, that's why I'm asking you these questions. There is a method to my madness.
The thing about Han Solo that you have to understand is he's consistently wrong about literally everything.
Right.
When you look at Han Solo in the first two Star Wars movies, anything that comes out of his mouth, because he said it, you know it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So on that basis, I'm going to give it to Alex.
Yeah, like how many parsecs would it take for... No, I'm just kidding, because we all know that that's not a unit of time.
Now, there's an answer to that one, though. The Kessel Run is an obstacle course, and by taking shortcuts, you can, in point of fact, have different parsecs come through on the run.
There you go.
So I'm just saying.
All right. Well,
nerd.
No, this is good. This is going to be. This is. I think that officially makes that canon. And
yeah, that wasn't mine. That was. I think that was Greg Bear.
Oh, okay.
Greg Bear wrote a Star Wars novel, and he. I'm thinking he was the one who took that on.
So, like, I know, aside from the whole Epstein drive thing, which, again, was an amazing part of the show, we're starting to see the beginning effects of, it seems to me at least, that the whole crew, they have PTSD. And without really giving anything away, it's definitely something that you're going to see the effects of Miller's ultimate sacrifice is going to be long lasting, like, or at least more than just like the tip of what we're seeing in this episode. So, how, when you guys were like kind of coming up with like how they were going to deal with or writing how they were going to take Miller's, the loss of Miller, how did you kind of figure out or decide how they were going to process it or how that was going to show in their character in the books and also how it was going to play out on screen?
Well, the one that we spent the most time on in the books is Holden, because Holden has this really long arc throughout the whole series of books, and his relationship with Miller and his difference of philosophy with Miller in the first book was so central that we wanted to see him reacting to that one really strongly. And we're starting to see that in the show too. And we will continue diving into that with Steve Strait and Holden throughout the rest of the season and going forward. And having that sort of conversion where, you know, you thought one thing and then now maybe you're going the other direction, and there's a balance point he hasn't hit yet that I think is really interesting.
I mean, in the beginning of this episode, he's saying point blank that he does not want to be the person that decides who gets to live and die. And he's outwardly struggling with responsibility, which has really kind of been a thing with him since the first season. I mean, he's someone that's always found the way to like just do status quo or do just enough to be doing his job.
Whatever. And then on the other hand, you have Miller, who's perfectly willing to take on the responsibility of deciding who lives and who dies.
Right. And including himself. And I almost feel like in some way now that like him seeing Miller make that ultimate sacrifice is going to change the way he approaches things.
Changed a lot of stuff. I mean, I was very interested to see the scene with Diogo using Miller for OPA propaganda.
Yeah. I mean,
when they arrived at Tycho, I thought that was,
he's
really
a martyr.
Neat. Yeah.
There's really no one better to talk about that than Diogo himself. Say hi, Andrew.
Oi, Pampa. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thank you for doing this with us.
Thank you.
You've become quite the little fan favorite over there.
Unexpectedly. That's amazing. I appreciate the support.
I know. You're getting a lot of it. People were pretty excited when I told them that you were going to be on the podcast today.
Oh, wow. I don't know how to react to that, except for I need to thank everybody at Sci-Fi, everybody on The Expanse, all my great writers. I mean, without them, none of this would be possible,
it's like
right?
A Golden Globe speech.
Yes,
I love
exactly.
It. You're amazing. So let's talk.
And it's just, I want to say, it's just weird hearing you speak without the Belter accent.
I know.
I don't know. It's just this total disconnect.
Yeah, I'm actually putting this on.
Oh, okay. The Belter accent is your normal talking voice. Yeah.
That's right.
Right. Okay.
This is your fake. So let's talk a little bit about Diogo and Miller's bromance, because that's become, it was very popular over the past couple of episodes. And also where Diogo now is kind of, you know, we're talking about episode 6. So we're talking about Paradigm Shift. And Diogo is, well, basically he's getting laid in honor of Miller in this episode. But yeah, tell us a little bit about, you know, your boy, your alter ego.
I'm cheering for him. You know, he thinks he's a big deal, but he's really not. And he's unleashed his inner nerd. And really, when I was able to connect with that, I found Diogo, you know. And he looks up to Miller. He's Miller's sidekick now, which is amazing. And Miller is like this hero figure for him. And he's accomplished everything that Diogo wishes he could be one day. And I think there's an exchange there. Miller also sees a young version of him who is maybe going down the wrong path. And with some advice, he's able to maybe achieve some things in the long run that he wasn't able to.
So, yeah, because in the beginning, when we first meet Diogo, he's nothing but like just punk, you know, water thief. And now he joins a rebel, you know, freedom fighter fraction, organization, gang, whatever you want to call it. It's a lot of things.
Well, and that's one of the things I wanted to ask, and this is, you know, for Ty and Daniel as well as Andrew. When Diogo showed up at the beginning in season one, was there already a plan for him to be present through this, through this far into the series?
Well, Ty?
Yeah, so there was some talk about it, but we got to give credit to Andrew there, because if the actor playing Diogo had come in and been terrible, we would have scrapped all of those plans. But Andrew came in and did a fantastic job, and so every time we got a chance to add more Diogo scenes, we did, because we knew we were going to get great work from Andrew. So that's why he's so present in the second season, because everybody really loved what he did in the first season. But we always liked the idea of taking a young belter and showing how he becomes radicalized. How does a young punk from series become a freedom fighter for the OPA? What's the process of that? Because we don't have any other characters we get to see that view from.
Andrew, speaking of like the fact that you do become radicalized, did you do anything to kind of look into how that happens in real life? Because it's a pretty timely topic.
Well, that's a good question.
Thanks.
I think that the main key to Diogo is finding his humanity. You know, I think that even though you see him one way from his perspective, he's not that person. And I think that the more he develops, the more he finds his inner strength and his inner calling and his inner cause. And that's what we connect with when we see Diogo. And I think that's why we like him so much, is that he's fighting for what he believes is the right side.
Do you now, like you said, like finding his humanity, but he is still, you know, like the saying goes, one person's freedom fighter is another person's terrorist. So did you explore at all like the psychology behind people that, you know, do go from just maybe like teenage kids that are very normal, average, and then suddenly they're part of this radicalized group and they're freedom fighters?
Well, I think you see it in the news all the time, but you also see it just here at home. You see it walking down the streets of Toronto. You see homeless people, and you feel for them. You see kids my age who are going down the wrong path. And if you really look into their humanity, you realize that they're just people like us, and they're just trying to do the best for themselves.
So it's really just a matter of like survival.
That's really all it is, really. Yeah.
Can you talk a bit about what it was like when you got your first script and saw this entire made up language that you were going to have to learn to speak?
Yeah, dude, you're doing amazing with it, by the way.
Thank you. I saw this script and I was really nervous, as I am now. And
don't be nervous.
I worked with Eric Armstrong, who's an amazing belter coach, and he helped us through it. And we learned the language phonetically, which really, really helped. And you know, taking these 30 languages and amalgamating them into one is quite a daunting feat at first.
Because I think line by line, you've probably had the most, if I'm remembering correctly, out of any of the characters. Would you say that's accurate?
I think so. I was speaking to Mark Fergus at first, and he was telling me about the thick Creole accent, and having read it in the books, I wanted to stay true to that. So I wanted to make sure that I delved deep into it and learned, you know, syllable per syllable and word for word to get it absolutely accurate, because I think it defines the belters.
How long did it take for that to feel natural for you?
Still doesn't.
Do you ever find yourself just like slipping into that accent or saying little belter slang?
Only when my friends demand it.
So like when you're drinking, then obviously.
Right.
It's your drinking party trick. So speaking of belter and how, like, you know, people are really, they're into this like hardcore. And I have to say, like, one of the things that I love, you know, last week I was saying how much I appreciate that the fandom is so, they're so friendly and inviting, and they're so excited and enthused. And the other thing that I love is how creative the Expanse fans are. And that goes from, like, you know, from live tweeting, which you never live tweet because you hate fun and joy. But
that's true.
Me?
But no,
I'm just talking to Adam. Me. Yes.
But they live tweet and they'll come up with like funny little hashtags, you know, like Misunderstood Miller is a very funny one. So one of the things somebody did, and I don't know, Andrew, if you've heard this, is somebody made up a belter rap.
What?
Yeah, so we're going to play it. We're going to shout him out. His name's Jeremy. What was his last name? Drury? I don't know if I'm saying, I'm so sorry if I'm saying your last name wrong. I don't know why I do that when I'm being recorded, because I actually can pronounce words normally in public. But check out this awesome, we're going to play it for you guys. And I don't know, I kind of think we should make it the theme song. So listen,
I'm excited.
You should be. This is
need,
really
you
good.
You need to back it up, because you're pretty far into the video.
The beat.
Right?
No, I'm not.
The one I said you didn't have the beat.
Oh, there
before.
It is.
Can you hear it?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, coming straight to you from Sirius Station. Where my rock hoppers at. Keep my mag boot on the neck of the inner sasa. This for me fama Eros. We see what happened there. Check it out.
Here we go.
Belt a loader. OPA soldier, weight of the solar placed on the shoulder of a billion belters building a better living. They'll never living, knowing I had to consider space in their own children. That filter don't work, bro. Helplessly with hurt soul. Watch me, little girl, lip and cheek turn purple. Drink an unfiltered aqua to me, piss turn brown. And you wonder why we resist your crown. From Gamma Nina Tycho, we might go psycho. That's how life go. At the wrong end of the rifle, Pashanga, you win. Boasting that they run shit to me, Bratalanda. Luna in the OPA gunship. Every belt are unavenged. That's a debt that I allow. Who's next to die? Come now. Won't rest till I uncrown these wretched guys somehow. Be weapon fire bruck out to leave your body floater like the Epson drive cut out. Remember the camp, blood on the enemy hands. They want the belt to submit, but surrender we can't. They say the long bone that don't resemble a man, but her man has got to stand up. Remember the camp, remember the camp. The movement is set to expand. They say the belt to submit, but surrender they can't. They say the belter, he is less than a man, but that man has got to stand up. Remember the can't, remember the can't.
Boom.
Belter loader.
Wow.
Yeah, right? I gotta be honest with you.
Look upon what you have wrought.
I like this better than the belter dubstep. I'm throwing it out there. I think that someone should bring this kid into it. Let him record it for real. That's my vote.
I was like bobbing my head to that.
Right?
Yeah.
He's into it, because it was like a video. Yeah.
Andrew, have you had any interactions with fans online or offline who've recognized you from the show or approached you from the show and expressed their appreciation for Diogo and what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, the fans are amazing on Twitter. There's these fans who they made these Diogo t-shirts, and they wore them, and they took pictures of them, and they sent it to me, and it was really overwhelming.
Wait, was it just your face on a t-shirt?
It was like a cardboard cutout of my face, kind of, something
imagine,
like that.
Imagine if they started making, like, you know those Che Guevara shirts, but they make them of Diogo.
Oh my.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
I'm like, guys, I'm giving you a bunch of merchandising ideas right here. I just want you to know that. Just appreciate that. Andrew, we had a couple of questions actually from Reddit, from fans of Diogo. So the first one is, they want to know what your favorite line, if you have one, that you've gotten to deliver so far.
Spacewalk pretty fun, yeah?
You're like, Diogo's like the ultimate shit talker. I love it.
Yeah.
I'm so here for it. They want to also know if you've ad-libbed or added any lines that made it onto air.
If I did, it was subconscious, and I'm sorry about that, Ty.
and the other one is somebody is giving me crap for saying that I didn't like Arrival. So let's we'll talk about that.
Which you deserve wholeheartedly.
I know, but hold on. Like, all right, no, yeah.
That does mean you're a bad person.
I've heard that, yeah.
I'm not a
bad
person.
And should probably be destroyed.
So Andrew, I guess, do you want to talk a little bit about shooting that spacewalk scene? That was one of Diogo's finer moments.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It was, man, Ty, how high was that in the air when we were on those scaffoldings? That was really high up.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably 15, 20 feet where you guys were.
15, 20 high? Feet. I was trying not to look down and lose my balance. It was a lot more daunting in real life than Diogo makes it seem. I'll tell you that much. Diogo loves it, but as much as he does, I think
but
I
Andrew
would,
doesn't.
I would get motion sick. I don't know how he does it.
Did you get to like get flung around on a in a harness and on like a little wire, like what they do to apparently they do that to Wes, and they just leave him there in the harness, like hanging, forget about him.
I heard about that. Yeah, the blood running to his head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I had an experience like that, except not upside down. So it wasn't like that. But my legs are definitely numb by the end of it. But man, but seeing the final take of that is like, is so rewarding because it's amazing.
No, we hung you in the first season. We put you in that rock tunnel.
Right. Oh, upside down. Wasn't that upside down?
Well, I don't know that we did a bunch of it upside down. I don't know if we hung him there upside down for a long time, but we did a bunch of it upside down. But we hung him. So there's this 20-foot long fake rock tunnel, and Andrew's on wires, and we're hanging him in the middle of this. So he can't, like, it's totally claustrophobic in there, right? And he can't move, and he can't breathe. The helmet wasn't working right for the air, so he was having trouble breathing. And finally, you know, he'd been in there forever, and finally we got him out. And we took the helmet off, and he starts like gagging, like he's gonna throw up. And they're like, "Hey, are you okay?" He's like, "Yeah, I thought I was gonna throw up in my helmet." And the director's like, "Dude, tell somebody. Don't just die in your helmet. It's okay.
But
let us know."
It totally worked for the scene.
It did.
This is the part of the podcast where we try to convince people not to come be actors on The Expanse.
Oh man, the sound guy was like, all I could hear was Diogo swearing.
So you're saying there's no time soon that if, like, let's say we in your lifetime we end up colonizing space or people actually get to go to space, you're not signing up to have any part of that is what you're saying, Andrew?
I think if I was fighting for a cause and believed in it wholeheartedly like Diogo, I could definitely be there.
Aww.
Yeah. That's nice. He survived being hung upside down, so yeah. You know.
I feel like you guys, I gotta be honest, I kind of feel like Ty and Daniel like do this on purpose. Especially Ty.
He loves it.
Yeah.
I do like writing scenes that are really uncomfortable for other people to shoot.
Yeah. See?
And then I'm just sitting in a chair drinking coffee that someone else brings to me. It's pretty amazing.
You're such a diva.
Meanwhile, they're hoisting lunch up to these people on like a pulley system.
They don't get lunch.
No, they just
they just leave them there. Everybody else, the crew goes to lunch. The actor is just staying there in a harness.
Yeah.
If we fed them, they would throw up. Weren't you listening?
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah. But that would be, you got to use that. You got to use that for the.
Well, I remember like I came in a day early to make sure that I would get it right. And because I'd never been hoisted up in the air that high before. And basically it was really easy and I was having so much fun, but once they got all the gear on and everything and they put me in that claustrophobic space, I had no idea that I'd be claustrophobic, but I was.
That's really not the way I'd want to find out that I was claustrophobic though.
No, but it was all worth it, right?
That's not you being weak, Andrew. Anyone would be claustrophobic as shit in that scene. I mean, I don't care how badass you are. If we hang you 20 feet off the ground in a tiny tunnel on ropes, you're probably going to be a little claustrophobic.
Thank you, Ty.
It's starting to sound like, I don't know, I don't know if you guys had this in Toronto, and I don't know if you ever had this, but we used to have something in high school called Project Adventure, which was like, it was like an extracurricular, like a type of gym class. And they had you doing these just ridiculous things. And sometimes you were learning how to rock climb. And
that was just for the bad kids. Sure.
No, it's just, I went to a nice high school and I'm from a nice town. So you're from like what? Kentucky. So I guess it was just us snobby kids from Ridgewood. Exactly.
But that's pretty much what The Expanse is what we're saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It sounds like to be on The Expanse is to go through Project Adventure.
So, Andrew, would you say that, what would you say is your favorite scene that you've gotten to work on so far? Is that up there, the space stuff, or something else?
I think the one where I'm talking shit to Miller and he's puking, because that was fun to watch.
On the can, right, where you guys are getting shot over to Eros?
Yeah, I was just making fun of him the whole time, and he was just helpless. That was hilarious.
Can I
tell you guys what the best Diogo scene ever is, though? The best acted scene that he has ever done? The one where he walks out and goes, "Hey, maybe nobody's here," and then immediately gets shot in the face and goes.
That was so much fun.
So, Andrew, when you were getting to talk shit to Miller, were you like, "I'm talking shit to the Punisher right now"? Did you feel like the sense of, like, you know, did it feel that much cooler because it's Thomas Jane?
Heck yes. Yeah, man, he was awesome though. Like, he was so generous when I was between takes. I was trying to get it right, and you know, I don't know if I told you guys, but this is my first TV show, so it was kind of a big deal for me. And I would ask Tom if he would run lines with me, and he was all for it. And I think that really eased me into the process. So that was amazing.
I know you said that once you found out that like Diogo was kind of like a nerd, that's like what you were able to like latch onto. So, are you a nerd, or you've a fan of sci-fi?
Oh yeah, for sure. I've unleashed my inner nerd. Yeah. When I was doing that that belter dance, I'd never danced before. Mm-hmm. So that was the most daunting scene. I couldn't sleep the night before. And I went up to Naomi like minutes before I did that, and I asked her if she could Dominic Tipper. I can't believe I'm calling
it's
her.
It's okay.
By her statement.
We know who you meant.
And apparently she's an amazing dancer, so I was asking her for some tips, and when it came to it, I think I totally butchered her dance, but I think it worked, because Diogo's this kid who thinks he's cooler than he is, so he can't dance, but he thinks he can, and that's why I love him.
It's all about the confidence.
Well, isn't Dominique, like, I think she, like, was in a pop band or something back in England.
No, actually, Dom was a professional dancer, like dancing behind, like, you know, like Beyonce and
like
stuff.
A backup dancer.
Yeah, yeah.
And Kanye.
And was one of the top professionals in the UK. She was at the top of that field.
Yeah, but I thought she was also in like a girl band in the UK.
I think she sang for a while, but I don't know how long she did that compared to how long she was dancing.
We have to get her back on the show so we can get to the bottom of
this. Well, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean,
and then also ask her about Andrew's dancing.
Right. Well, I mean, all these things are going to happen. Because now my favorite thing to do is like find random funny things that like, you know, the cast has done before so I could bring it up.
She used to dance for Kanye, which is pretty impressive.
What?
Wow.
That's like going to be a whole episode of the podcast right there. Just talking to her about that experience. Andrew, what's been your favorite part of the show so far? That even that if you're not in that scene, what's been your favorite part of the show?
Miller and Julie Mao. I think that scene was. I think I shed some tears. Yeah, in episode 205, that was breathtaking, and man, it was a big one for me. I think I saw it in its rough cut, so I was super impressed, and yeah, that's the one.
Was the scene of you getting the neck tattoo real?
Heck yes. I still have it on right now.
There you go.
You're very
it's verisimilitude. That's good.
A man dedicated to his craft.
Well, I can ask a question.
You can go ahead.
Sure. Just in general, without giving away spoilers, I'm guessing we haven't seen the last of Diogo at this point. So is there anything you can talk about in terms of what we can expect from him moving forward without, you know, major plot points?
That's a tough one.
I know.
Because Diogo has gone through a very interesting arc, being that badass kid to being a little bit of a comic relief, but also a dedicated spacewalker. And so I think what you see next is really going to be the evolution of Diogo in the next step. So I really don't want to give it away. No spoilers.
But we probably got a hint of it with the scene in this episode of him, you know, rallying the OPA faithful on Tycho, I'm guessing. Yeah.
All I can say is that he's extremely dedicated to his cause, and I commend him for that. So you'll see what's coming up is going to be, I think it'll surprise you all, but I think you'll like it.
I mean, you're very good at this. You've got a good future, because that avoiding those types of questions is a necessary skill in the sci-fi world these days.
But
I'm not avoiding, but answering them without giving things away.
So how much of it do you think, and Ty and Daniel, you can definitely weigh in on this. How much of it do you think is that Diogo is very committed to his cause, or that he's a young, impressionable kid, and the one person that he kind of felt was giving him that guidance is now gone, and now it seems like someone in is kind of like sweeps in and is sort of preying on that vulnerability?
Well, I think that anytime you have a social movement like the OPA, you're going to attract people to it who, you know, it chimes with their personal experience, their personal history, and that the people they look up to have modeled that behavior and shown them a way forward. And sometimes that way forward is really admirable, and sometimes it's a little suspect. And, you know, that's That's true. That's not talking about the show. That's talking about the world.
Andrew, what do you think? How much do you think of Diogo is he's really dedicated or he's very vulnerable and, you know, needs that father figure. And now that Miller's gone, he's kind of prey for somebody else without giving anything away. That's why I'm not saying more than that.
Well, I think every 19-year-old could benefit from a mentor growing up. And I think that it really helps you put things into perspective, because at this point, I think Diogo is lacking perspective. So I think that he's a go-getter, but he's going in one direction and he's easily swayed like some sort of billiard game. If you hit the ball to the left, he's going to go that way. If you hit it straight, he's going to go that way. He's pushed in whatever direction he's pushed in, but I think his heart is pure. So we'll see where that goes.
He does find some, as the season progresses, and I don't want to give any spoilers for later episodes, but he does find some new, I guess, mentors or people that he looks up to that help guide him. And maybe not all of his decisions are the best decisions, but it's interesting to watch him grow.
Yeah, I think his cockiness kind of takes the best of him at most times, and he thinks he knows what's up, but he really doesn't.
As we all do at that age.
Yeah.
I will say I see my younger self, not necessarily as because I worked in the belt
It's the dubstep, right?
Yeah, it was the dubstep. Yeah. No, but just the whole, you know, we all at that age think that we know what's right and what's wrong, and the people older than us who tell us we need life experience to understand those things are full of it.
Yeah.
So I totally get where he's coming from.
Well, Andrew, I want to thank you for taking time out and using Skype for the first time to like join us on this podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Is there anything before we let you go that you want to like say to anyone out there or
to the Diogo fans of the world?
Yeah. To your groupies.
I want to say, Oi, Pampa.
Right.
And I'm going to try to track down one of those t-shirts because I want one.
Yeah, we're going to definitely. If anyone out there has them, feel free to send them to us at 30 Rock.
Well, I want to talk about Vassarala in this episode because I think you guys heard at the beginning that my feeling was very much that in the first season she was kind of catching up to what was going on. And I feel like now she's on top of things. Her scene with Aaron Wright was a really powerhouse moment for Sheree. And I would just love to hear your guys' take on that and where you think the character is right now and kind of what that's leading to.
Well, I think part of what's happening is a reflection of the source material. I mean, the first book, which we've just sort of brought to a close, was really the noir story of Miller, and we're now feathering into the political thriller, and that's her natural environment.
And this is actually a question having to do with her specifically, but also about the show in general. Is there a cap on the number of F-bombs you can drop in one episode? Right now?
I don't know, Ty, is there?
I don't know that there is any sort of strict limit, because it's all self-policing. It's whatever the network thinks they can get away with and not piss their advertisers off, because it's not enforced on them by anyone. But I think they do have some sort of internal guideline that they use to decide that, and it's all a complete mystery to me.
Because we need much more swearing.
Well, that's the thing, too.
From Vassarala specifically.
Everybody, well, not everybody. There's a couple of people that are like, you know, clutching their pearls. But for the most part, I would say 90%+ of the fans are complaining that the swears get like muted.
Uh-huh.
And so they want to hear the swearing.
Yeah.
So
especially from that character. I mean, sure, you know, having read the books. In the books,
she swears.
Known for her salty language.
Yeah. That was specifically what they're saying. They want to hear her swearing.
In the books, it's not just that she uses, you know, rough language. She's fairly creative with it when you get to the book. Go ahead.
Speaking of the other things that people really wanted to hear, there's a line that's, I think it's slightly changed a little bit, that Amos says in the books that he does say in this episode about, he'd do her if she let him.
that was my favorite Amos blank stare moment so far.
It was fantastic.
When he says when he says that, and he just has no expression one way or the other, not even like a "huh." It's just kind of like, yeah, that's the fact.
Well, that's yeah, Amy. He's just telling you the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he has enormous respect for her and enormous respect for Holden, and he's happy that they're together, but he's not blind. He knows what she looks like.
Yeah. He was great in this episode again. Once again, I just, his whole, and I guess the relationship with Alex, too, was a lot of fun. Seeing that develop. Are we going to see more interplay between those two moving forward?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Well, you can see a lot of the relationships on the Rocinante develop and shift, and people coming into their own and bouncing off of each other in ways they haven't before, which is, it's part of the fun of the thing.
Yeah. And with Holden and Naomi, especially, like, their romance is such a key part of the story in the books, and a key thing for Holden to hold on to. yeah, I know. But obviously there's stuff going on under the surface already with her lying to him about launching the torpedo. And
yeah. I mean, there's, listen, I love Naomi. Again, like this season, I feel like people now this season, you're really getting to know the characters in a different way. So you're actually starting to like be able to form those attachments that audiences need to form to most of the characters, except for Holden, which seems to be the least favorite character of like almost everybody.
Is that true?
Yeah. A lot of people just, they don't like Holden. Not that they don't like Steven. They don't like Holden.
Holden has the longest arc.
Yeah.
And that's something Steven has had to work with more than I think almost anybody else in the show, that Holden's story is the one that moves in some ways the slowest because it has the farthest to go.
And it's not a knock. And it's usually the non-book readers that don't like him. I think because they've only read the first book. So they don't know where that's going. So I get it. I understand that. but as I was saying, like, I really do like all the characters, but Naomi's starting to... There's some things that she's starting to do, and I'm like, girl, I don't know if I can, like, I don't know if I back this decision.
Well, I really, there's a lot, you know, and this isn't a huge spoiler, I guess, to say, but later on in the books, you do learn a lot about Naomi's backstory and where she comes from. Are you guys planning on integrating that kind of earlier in the arc of the show? Or seeing
We've already seen some hints of it. There was some conversation about that in the first season. The way that that's unfurling and the way that the information is about who she is and what she is will come out differently than it did in the book. But also, the version of Naomi that Dominique has brought to the show is different than the one that was in the book. It's in some ways a lot more proactive, a lot more identified with the Belters as a people and as a political group. And that's a feature. That's great.
Yeah, and I think part of that, I was thinking of that as a book reader watching this episode, how different it is when you're not seeing something only from one person's POV. You know, because in the book, you've got these POV chapters, and you definitely get the other characters, but you kind of are getting the POV characters' impression of them. And to see it kind of played out where you're seeing more of Naomi because you're seeing her POV in the show was a really interesting experience.
I mean, we keep talking about the Rossi crew. And I mean, again, there's a lot that happened in this episode. And I think one of the things that we really need to talk about is once again, this episode ends in a holy shit moment.
Yeah.
And we need to talk about that because finally we see Bobby and the Marines again. And we... What?
Yeah, Ty and Daniel, please tell us exactly what happened and what it means and what's going to happen in full detail.
Before you even do that, though, I literally was like, was it at the end of this episode or the next episode? I actually sent them a text or a DM on, and I was like, what the hell is going on? Like, I was binge watching these next three episodes, and literally after every single one, my jaw was like on the floor, and this started it, that I was like, holy shit. And then next episode just gets a bigger holy shit. So
And I got to say, I was the last episode. I had that moment of that we talked discussed why I was wrong about feeling that
which
not
is just
seeing
that you're always wrong.
Yes, of course, but not seeing the resolution of something and jumping ahead. But in this episode, I loved that. I loved that we kind of saw the setup, and then we cut to the aftermath.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it was really powerful.
It's one of those places where we decided to go a different direction than the books go. I mean, in the books, you begin with that moment, and it's very clear what happened. There's no doubt about what happened. And Narain early on said, you know, the interesting thing about this as from a TV show perspective is dealing with Bobby's, finding a way to deal with Bobby's PTSD from that event. And a good way to dramatize that is to have her second guessing herself. And if we show everything that happens, then when she second guesses herself, it won't be believable because the audience will be like, no, the thing that happened totally happened. We saw it.
Yeah, and that was right there.
Yeah, so rather than do that, what he said is let's show the moment before it happens. Let's show the aftermath of it. And then as the season goes on, we can sort of gradually reveal what actually did happen, how it's affecting Bobby. We can then play up the fact that she's sort of questioning herself. Did I see what I thought I saw? Because, of course, I have all these massive internal injuries and maybe that messed with my mind. And it also allows us to then use questioning her on what may or may not have happened as a centerpiece of the future Martian and UN negotiations about what happened on Ganymede. So it created a lot of story by sort of not just openly dramatizing that moment. And all of that story was stuff that was really good. So it just felt like the right choice once Narain had laid it out. It became obvious that that's the way we should go.
And I also want to say, and this is not a spoiler, but next episode, you realize why Frankie is the real deal.
That's the one thing. That's the one thing
I didn't... Her acting is... Like, you see how good she is.
But I wanted to see... That's the one thing, and I hope we will see it in the future episodes.
You see it next
her
week.
Of her going to town in power armor, like, fighting like a mad person. I think that would be cool. But you know, I liked the cut to the aftermath
but
this
the
time,
acting
but I was
wise,
like, oh, man.
The acting-wise, you're going to see she's really... Yeah.
It's not like you're never going to get that.
Of course, that's what I was saying.
You know, hang around.
That would be rude.
Give me everything I want right now, and don't make me wait for it.
And honestly, it's moments like these. I'm actually kind of glad that I was like, I'm not going to read all the books yet because I don't. That feeling that you tend to get, where you're like, oh, well, I want this thing to happen. It's like I'm just going to go for the ride right now, and then I'm going to go back and read the book version.
Yeah,
because I feel like even with movies, like I feel like if you sometimes that kind of it puts more expectation, and I think fans already tend to have expectation problems as it is. So I just don't have any expectation. I'm just like, all right, I want to see what they're going to do.
Well, so you've watched ahead.
I've watched ahead.
I was going to ask you as a non-book reader what you thought happened, because I kind of know what happened. And I was going to see what your take on it was.
I'm not going to say right now, because people that are listening right now, I don't want to spoil it for them.
Okay, so say this. Not having, when you just saw 205 or 206 and you saw that final scene, did you know what was going on?
No. I was like, what the shit?
Right.
And then it was like three or four different things that I thought could be going on. And then even in the next episode, you still have that what the shit the entire episode. So like, and I'm not, again, like I'm not just saying this because like, oh, we do the podcast with them, whatever. Like that has nothing to do with it. Like, first of all, this podcast wouldn't even be happening if I already wasn't like, this is awesome. But this is so much better than anything that I could have hoped for. And I'm a very picky person when it comes to like stuff that I'll watch or read or anything that I do with my time. And I can't watch a lot of, when it comes to sci-fi television, I actually don't like most sci-fi television. I tend to like sci-fi movies better. And the few sci-fi TV shows that I liked are like Battlestar Galactica. They're these really, really well done, whether or not you like sci-fi or not, you would like those types of shows. And this is blowing every single expectation I had out of the water for this show.
And I was really happy that we only got a very blurry look at the thing that we saw at the end of episode 206.
Because that's the thing that makes you like, what the shit just happened?
Well, and yeah, and it's kind of like, you don't know exactly what you're seeing.
And you don't know if she's hallucinating that.
Right.
Or if there's a thing, and it's like, it definitely leaves you with chills, like, what the hell? Because it just introduces something else. And the best part is that that's not, it gets like, it's like a peak, and then the next couple of episodes, it's like on to other business. And you know there's this thing looming out there, and it's like kind of scary because you're like, but what about that thing that she saw? Because you don't get an answer right away. It's, yeah. But she does, without the physicality part, her acting, like she... You know, and I remember when you guys told me that you had cast her, and it was because it wasn't just that she had this physicality, but because she actually could act. You see next episode that's 100% true. She does that whole part, and again, it's not giving anything away. There's a whole part.
Save it for the next episode of the podcast.
It's not giving anything. She's giving with a conversation. You see how good of an actress she is. So good job.
She really turned out to be quite a find in like every way we could have hoped for. I mean, I would say that we were lucky, but you know, the casting people worked really hard to find her. So it wasn't all luck, but even with all the hard work, you know, there is some element of luck in actually finding a person that fits all the stuff that you need.
I feel like this really was the first time that we could start seeing Bobby really come into the story. I mean, we have the introduction to her in the first few episodes, but I mean, we dropped her for a couple of episodes there while we finished up the story on Eros, and now we actually get to go back to her, and I'm very pleased that we got to do that.
I also have to say, casting wise, because then you're like, my main concern was after last week that the show is going to be like, all right, well, now what? You know, because now this big monumental thing happened, and it's like now you're kind of in mourning. But it's like you're only in mourning for the first few parts of the beginning of this week's episode. And then it's like there's so much other shit going on that you miss Miller, but the show is not missing Miller. And that's
right.
That's really important, because I think that's a really hard thing to pull off. And on top of the fact that it's like now, you know, first of all, Wes is doing an amazing job with Amos. And then Frankie steps up and she's doing this amazing job with Bobby. And then you guys have other people that are coming up in the next couple of episodes that those were awesome casting decisions too.
You're thinking about Prax?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's so good. Yeah.
So, but going back to this episode in particular, the one thing I want to just mention really thank the team for doing, I wanted to thank everybody in the writer's room for not making us do a love triangle.
Yeah.
I know that the temptation was there to have the whole Holden, Amos, Naomi thing. And I'm just so glad we didn't have to.
That was one of the refreshing things about the book too, you know, that you didn't have that going on. It was just, they have this relationship and they've got to work it out and figure out how to connect, but there's not a big external, you know. Yeah.
It's not the thing that you always see.
Right.
But I also like the fact, because it's like, you know what? It's honest in that not every guy and girl, just because they're really close, doesn't mean that they want to date each other or bang or anything like that. So it's...
Unless they saw Stephen Strait's abs.
This is seriously a problem.
And then all bets are off, man.
So that's funny that you
I'm glad
that.
We got a scene. That's yeah. I should say that. I want to thank the team and Sci-Fi for putting another scene.
The writers.
Yeah, for putting another scene of Stephen Strait shirtless.
So yesterday, last night, was live tweeting, because they make a joke, like, don't get all Holden on me. And I tweeted, fun fact, Holden used to be in his own emo high school band and they did Cure covers. And I put a picture of Stephen Strait as War and Peace and I tweeted it. And then all of a sudden, these girls start tweeting me. They're like, oh my God, is Stephen Strait in The Expanse? And I'm like, yeah. And you know what? Sometimes he's not even wearing a shirt. And now this girl is like, I have to start watching the show. Why didn't you nerds tell me Stephen Strait's in the show? So if there's any way that I could get some money for pimping him out on behalf of the show.
But they can... But they can join my Facebook group.
Right. And that was the thing too. I was gonna say, actually might have your own little groupie fan group of like Stephen Strait's abs people.
And I am their king.
Yes.
Yes.
Which is kind of troubling, actually, to hear those words out loud. So
a friend of mine used to run the website Areology. Have you ever heard of Areology?
Mm-mm.
It was the website devoted entirely to David Bowie's area.
Oh my God.
Okay.
And it was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pictures throughout his entire career of David Bowie and his impressive area.
He was blessed in more ways than one. Yeah.
And maybe Adam could do that for Stephen. You know,
StephenStraightsAbs.tumblr.com.
That's it.
Do it.
Yeah.
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 All right. I'm writing this down.
Do we do it right now?
Yeah.
By the time this comes out next week, that Tumblr, I'm promising you right now, by the time this podcast goes live next week, that Tumblr page will be a reality. So yeah. StephenStraightsAbs.tumblr.com.
There you go.
You're laughing.
It's a movement.
Watch what happens.
Yeah.
Now,
watch what happens.
I think we're going to be laughing whether it happens or not. I think laughing is non-optional.
Yeah.
So in our shout out, I'm going to tell Adam to watch Magic City. The other show that Steven did I believe that one was on Stars or Cinemax, one of the two. But it was about like the 50s in Florida and the mob and all that stuff. And he plays the son of the sort of gangster who's starting a hotel. And I swear to God, they had Steven take his shirt off in every episode.
That's pretty funny. But you're not going to tell him to watch, what is that, The Covenant?
Yeah, you should also watch The Covenant.
Where he's like, they're like swimmers or something, and him.
Wow, this
and,
is a running theme.
Yeah, and yeah. Him and who's the dude that was in Friday Night Lights? Taylor, and he was in True Detective season two.
Taylor Kitsch.
Taylor Kitsch, that's it. Taylor Kitsch. They're like any excuse to have them with their shirts off.
All right, it's like the new Archie in Riverdale. Archie is allergic to shirts.
Is he? I have not seen that show yet. Yeah. So, Daniel, really quick before we do get to shout outs, I know that you had said that this was your favorite episode, right?
This is absolutely one of my favorite episodes.
So what was it that made this episode your favorite episode?
The things that particularly I loved, I loved the scene. I loved everything about the scene where Holden and Naomi reveal their relationship. Just everything about that worked for me. And I loved that we got to take the Solomon Epstein story, the Drive story, and use that story as a comment on the shift in the show that we didn't get to do in the books, that wouldn't have worked in the books, but that you lay them over each other and it seems like the one is there just to talk about the change in technology with Eros. I thought that those feathered together beautifully.
And I think for me, not to cut you off, but like the moment when he drops that last line and then it cuts to Ganymede, again, knowing, being a book reader and knowing what was coming, that was such an oh shit moment for me.
Right?
To have that line come followed by that establishing shot, it was like, oh my God.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
And there's always the fear. I mean, the other thing is the context of it, because it's always the fear when you've had that kind of really powerful moment like we had at the end of 205 that you're going to come back and it's the suck fairy will have come and the show won't be good anymore because they had this moment and how are we going to do better than that? And that it was able to hold its own after that. I mean, just for me personally, that was a tremendous relief and a tremendously powerful experience coming in and knowing that we have something here that's going to keep holding on. It's going to keep going.
Yeah, I really, again, like I know I keep saying it, just, oh my God, this show's getting so good. Like, just wait. It's getting so good. Did you have anything else you want to cover? Or should we go into our shout outs?
No, that was it. I'm good.
Okay.
I'm ready for the next episode.
Yeah, aside from, you know, Magic City, what do you guys want to shout out? What are you into this week?
Well, the thing that I was going to talk about actually is there's a series of video essays online called Every Frame of Painting. That guy named, I think, Tony Zhu. Is that right, Ty?
I don't know. I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
I think it, well, I may have horribly mispronounced his last name, but he's a filmmaker who, among other things, has put together a bunch of short films talking about the process of filmmaking and the process of editing. And as I've come into making this show from writing books, and I've had to learn this whole new kind of toolbox, watching this guy just kind of break down things like how music works and how action works and how action comedy works and how you frame the images and how you cut between images and what it is to be a film editor has been a tremendous treat. And so if you're at all interested in the process of filmmaking, it's every frame of painting and it's gorgeous.
Okay.
And then go watch Suicide Squad as the counterexample. If there was ever a movie that showed the importance of editing, it's that one.
Yeah, Dan Olson, the guy who does YouTube under Foldable Human, has a whole editing video on Suicide Squad.
Oh, interesting.
Why it didn't work.
I'm gonna have
as a sample of editing. It's really great. That one is a very interesting watch. I sent it to Daniel a while back because he's so into editing.
Ty, what's your shout out for this week?
So my wife and I were sick for a couple days, and while we were sick, we watched the entirety of Made in America, the O.J. Simpson documentary.
So good.
Yeah, because I had seen The People versus O.J., right, which, you know, is the fictional or semi-fictional version of that. And then watching the documentary Made in America was just fascinating. It was like, I don't even know how, like, what was it, like 8 hours, 10 hours, some crazy amount of time like that. But it was riveting the entire time. And that story is so much more complicated than we understand. I mean, the crime is not complicated, but the context in which it happened and L.A.'s sort of the war between the cops and the citizens of L.A. at the time that informed all of it. And Johnny Cochran, who wound up seeming like a villain after the trial, but you watch the documentary, he was actually kind of a heroic character who had been fighting, you know, injustice in the PD for decades before that trial happened. It was an absolutely fascinating watch, and I do love a good documentary, so I would recommend that to anyone.
What about you, Adam? Do you have anything?
Not really. I'm reading Warbreaker now by Brandon Sanderson, fantasy novel. I'm always looking, as I mentioned here, I'm looking for standalone novels in the fantasy and sci-fi genre. A friend recommended that one to me, so I am giving it a shot.
Okay.
But I'm very early in, so it's hard to tell. It's a world where magic comes from color. And so it's like this whole big thing. I haven't quite got. There's a lot of mythology. I'm still parsing, but definitely an interesting read. So that's what I'm up to at this time.
Okay, my shout out is so by the time everybody hears this, the Oscars will have already passed. But everybody should watch Moonlight if they haven't seen it. And I think for a number of reasons. First of all, it's just a beautiful movie, and it's such an important story, and the context of it, that it's about, you know, a black man and a gay black man and just why that's important. But also because I think in this day and age, we're so used to these big blockbuster productions that sometimes, like, we don't take the time to really appreciate just a good human story. And I think that that's why I love this film so much, because it's such a good human real story, and it's so well done. And you know, Janelle Monáe, she's amazing, just as an actress, which I never expected. I always liked her music, but I have a feeling we're gonna see a lot from her as an actress.
She was in Hidden Figures as
she's
well
in
right?
Hidden Figures as well, yeah. So that's my shout out, and I guess that's pretty much it for us this week. Thank you for everybody that keeps listening, that keeps on, you know, reviewing us and rating us on iTunes. As always, you know, you want to go to iTunes and give us 5 stars. you know, because we would give you 5 stars. And you can find us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Wire. If you have any questions that you want answered, you can just, you know, tweet us and hashtag the churn. Yeah, and
that's... And come back next week.
Come back, of course, next week, because, guys, you don't even understand how good shit is going to keep getting. Thank you, Ty and Daniel, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.